Welcome to the first ever Fix podcast. This is the podcast of the Feminem Idea Exchange, and here we're going to bring you all of the exciting talks from Fix 17, as well as some news and announcements that you need to know about so that you can come to our Fix 18. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme. I'm editor-in-chief at Feminem, and I'm so excited to share these talks with you because we had the most amazing time at Fix 17, and we want to share that with you in as many ways as possible. So talks are going to be here on the podcast, and there's also going to be video options available if you go to the blog, the website that you're all checking all the time anyway. First, I want to make sure that you guys get all the news that you need for Fix 18. So put this on your calendar now. Mark the dates so that you can request them off at the first possible moment so you can be at Fix 18. It's going to be in New York City at the New York Academy of Medicine, October 16 through 18, 2018. If you haven't been to the New York Academy of Medicine, you're going to love it. It's beautiful. It's up on Fifth Avenue, Museum Mile. The space alone is going to be amazing. And of course, the conference is going to be fantastic. I also want you to know that we are now accepting submissions right now for Fix 18 speakers. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your stories. Put a little video together, share it with us, and let's see you up on the big stage at Fix 18. And also, always, make sure you check out the Feminem shop. All the goodies, all the Feminem socks and the jackets and the mugs are all available on our shop on the website. The holiday seasons are coming up. These would be great gifts for yourself or for your mentor or your mentee, so take a peek. All right, with that, I want to get you to our first talk. This is going to be from Dr. Sarah Gray. She's an emergency medicine and an ICU doctor in Toronto, and she's fantastic. Her talk is called Feeling Better, and she's going to tell you all about how to do that.
I find that at most conferences we come to, we talk about how to get smarter, how to learn new evidence, how to make ourselves better. And what we spend very little time on is our failures. And I think this is a problem, because I think when we sweep our failures under the carpet, we can't learn from them effectively, and we can't heal from them effectively. And so what I want to do in the next few minutes is tell you a little bit about some of my failures, because maybe mine are similar to yours. And maybe by starting the conversation, we can start to normalize this a little bit to the betterment of our community. And so specifically, I'm going to talk to you about three things. I want to talk about the myth of perfection. I'm going to talk about our medical culture of silence and shame. And I want to introduce the concept of failing better or failing up. So let's start with perfection. Who has somebody they work with who they look up to, who they think is perfect? Right? Do you all? I have one. He works with me. His name is Brian, and he is amazing. He is rock star smart, and whenever I do something stupid, I think he would have made that diagnosis. He would not have missed that. And I make myself feel terrible in comparison to this myth in my head, because in fact, I'm sure it's a myth, because the same way that I am human, so is he. This is part of the definition of our humanity. We are fallible, and it is true of all of us. And sometimes we forget this because in medicine, we work and strive and try for perfection so seriously that we forget that failure is intrinsically part of our humanity. But in fact, when you start to look at it, it's clear that we all fail. Who has ever dropped their phone and cracked it? Yeah, you have. Right? It was most of you. It wasn't quite all of you, so let's go here. Who's ever forgotten to take a pen to their shift? Yeah, who's forgotten their stethoscope? Who's forgotten both on the same day? Yeah, right? Okay, so it's easy, it's clear that we all make these small fails. The problem is we choose to work in a high-risk profession. We choose to work in the emergency department, where small fails can have life or death consequences. And if you work there for long enough, we all have cases that haunt us, cases that stay with us. But we don't talk about them. And I think that's maladaptive. And so I'm going to tell you my five top fails, because I think somebody needs to go first. And it's the only way to start the conversation. And so here they are, in no particular order. When I started my staff career, In 2004, I was a sepsis researcher. And that first year, I had a young woman whose sepsis diagnosis I missed, and she died. I had a lawsuit that described my medical care using the word fail 27 times. The young pregnant mother who came in VSA, whose airway we could never get, and she died. The complaint letter that included a litany of criticisms, but the one that sticks with me most is worst doctor ever. And the young man in my ICU with a trach and a halo for his unstable C-spine. And in his agitation, he pulled out his trach and arrested. And we couldn't get the halo off to deliver excellent CPR. And we couldn't get him back. These cases make me feel sick. They make my hands shake, even though so many of them were years ago. But we don't talk about them, right? I think I'm not alone. I think maybe you have cases that haunt you too. We don't talk about them so we can look perfect on the surface and hide all of that stuff under the waterline, look marvelous on your social media, but maybe feel terrible about that case you had. And over years, when we don't talk about it, this leads to isolation and it leads to shame. And after years of feeling isolated and shamed, this leads us to burnout, to depression, to addiction, and to suicide. Suicide for me is the final common pathway. So far, I have two close friends who have died from suicide. And I know of a couple others. One was my best friend from high school. One was one of my husband's closest colleagues. And they were amazing, smart, marvelous, professional people who couldn't talk about their fears and their anxieties until they were overwhelmed. And when we maintain our culture of silence, we lose our most valuable resource. We lose people. People we love. And I'm sure it's not just me. I'm sure, in fact, everybody in the room has had a brush with these things or knows someone with burnout, depression, addiction, or suicide. And in fact, when we look at the data, the suicide rate for female physicians is double the average in age-matched controls. This is not somebody else's problem. This is our problem. And after I lost these people, I started thinking that I need to learn how to live differently. I need to learn how to connect with people differently, more honestly, so we can actually be there to support each other through this. And so I'm going to tell you my five steps. And they may not be your five steps. You may have a different approach, which is marvelous. This is just a starting point. And so for me, step one is to accept that you will fail. Because otherwise, you can spend an awfully long time in denial and repression. And that just doesn't help you get healthy fast. It will happen if you're in this career long enough. And that is okay. Step two, then, is to learn how to talk about it. And this sounds deceptively easy, but is actually extremely hard for physicians. We are socialized to believe that weakness is failure, and nobody wants to be the weak link. But in fact, it's not weak to stand up and talk about your failures. It might just be the hardest thing you do. And so if you are going to start talking about it, one of my favorite constructs is to find yourself a failure friend. This is your go-to person you talk to when you've screwed up. You want to choose wisely. Choose someone nice. Choose someone capable of empathy. Ideally, you choose someone who is familiar with your context. And so for me, having worked on this for a few years, I now have one failure friend for my work in the emergency department. I have one for the ICU, and I have three for parenting. There was no parenting residency. I really needed a residency. No, so I have the, I did, or a fellowship, or both. I need this team, right? And the fine print here is that you don't need your failure friend to have M&Ms with, right? If you just want to talk about how you should have intubated, you can talk to anybody. You go to your failure friend to talk about how you feel. You talk to them when you feel like quitting. You talk to them when you feel like drinking. You talk to them when you feel like jumping. And if you've chosen wisely, they lean back in and they take your hand and they say, I've been there too. We'll work through it together. Now, for some people, building this network takes a little time. And perhaps somebody is in crisis today. And so in that case, it is a perfectly reasonable option to find yourself a therapist or a mental health professional to help you through that. I've seen two therapists so far in my life, and I don't have a psychiatric diagnosis. I don't take any meds. I've never been given 5 and 2. Not yet. It's on the bucket list. Don't you think? Just once? No. No, I digress. No, but we have this stigma around seeing mental health professionals that we just need to get over, right? If you broke your leg, you would go see an orthopod. If your child had diabetes, you would take them to an endocrinologist. Your mental health is just as valuable as any of those other physical complaints. And I see this as an investment in my career longevity. It's important, and we need to seek the resources that are there for us. This is hard to do. Talking about it is hard to do. So step three, then, is taking care of yourself through this process. This is different for everybody. Maybe it's yoga, maybe it's meditation, maybe you like to run, maybe you like to read books. It doesn't matter what brings you inner peace, as long as you do it regularly and take that time. We need to celebrate like we mean it, because joy is an excellent antidote to despair. So don't skip that birthday party. Don't say no to the moment when you can go play in the park with your children. We need those precious moments. And in fact, I believe you should book it in your calendar. I think everybody, on an ongoing basis, needs to protect time for themselves the same way we protect time for our shifts. And so, in fact, I have a minute. Take out your phones. Take them out. And book an hour next week in your calendar. Or if you have a paper calendar, you can do that too. We won't judge you. But it's all good here. Book an hour next week of something that is fun for you. Maybe you go for a run. Maybe you have a coffee with a girlfriend. Maybe you get a massage. Maybe you just might need a nap. That's okay too. The point is, you then get to look in your calendar next week and see this hour that is just there for protected time for you. And if you like that day when you come up against it next week, then maybe you book it in your calendar for the following week. And maybe it becomes an ongoing investment in your wellness, because it's only an hour a week, and you are totally worth it. The other piece of being kind, or of taking care of yourself, is just the concept of being kind to yourself, the concept of self-compassion. This means treating yourself, talking to yourself, the way you would speak to your best friend. Many of us don't do that, but it turns out that if you're trying to achieve something difficult, that self-compassion is a vital part of that process. So this is something we should be thinking about and training on. And that brings us to step four. So step one was accept that you will fail. Step two is learn to talk about it. Step three is take care of yourself during that difficult process. Step four then is your time to sit down and learn about the case. From that place of balance, to look back and learn the medical details you need, maybe to learn the procedures you need, maybe to learn to forgive yourself for having failed in the first place. This is also the moment where you can stand up and teach about it. Because maybe if you talk about it, you can prevent the same mistake from happening to somebody else. And that brings us to step five. Step five is where you take that skill set, and rather than focusing it inwards on yourself, you turn outwards to your community, to your family, to your friends, to your children. Maybe it's not your crisis right now, maybe it is one of theirs. And maybe you could be a failure friend to them in their time of need or in their time of crisis. And so bottom line, I think perfection is a myth. And I choose to connect honestly with vulnerability, with truth, rather than stay isolated and ashamed and silent. I'm learning how to feel better. And I think we all need to start doing this together so that as a community, we can be there for each other, to support each other better, to get our suicide rate down, maybe just to the national average. Feeling better is important for us because keeping our silence can literally be deadly. Thank you for listening.